Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We continue right here on The Fan. Zach Gelb here with you discussing the Giants' 28-14 loss to the Buffalo Bills on Sunday at MetLife Stadium. The Giants 0-2 to start the 2019 season. And on Monday, Pat Shurmur would not commit to who would be starting at quarterback for the New York Football Giants coming up on Sunday against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So now we have speculation. Is this the end for Eli Manning in a Giants uniform? And will we officially see the Daniel Jones era start on Sunday? Let's get some more clarity on the situation. We'll do so with a buddy of mine who does cover the New York Giants for NJ.com, and that's Matt Lombardo here with us on WFAN. Matt, great to have you on as always. Thanks for the time. How you been?
What's going on, Zach? Thanks for having me.
Well, I've been great. Let's get to the team that you cover. It's been a disaster to start the season, to no surprise. When I evaluated the question earlier in the summer, when could we potentially see Daniel Jones, I was thinking maybe week 7 with the Cardinals and Lions being the two opponents, week 7, week 8. However, I think it's fair to speculate that we may have Daniel Jones under center come Sunday, especially when the coach wouldn't commit on who would the quarterback be on Sunday. So give me your read on this situation right now.
Yeah, Zach, I was right there with you back before training camp began in July. I wrote for Monday Morning Quarterback that I believed that week 7 against Arizona was the softest landing spot and most likely chance of when you'd see Daniel Jones make his debut. But that was before we saw what he did in the preseason, right? When he moved the offense effectively down the field, when he made the kind of throws that you see Patrick Mahomes and Drew Brees make pretty routinely, dropping the ball into tight windows, airing it out, flashing the kind of mobility that really unlocks the RPO aspects of Pat Shurmur's scheme. I was right there up until the beginning of the preseason. And then after week 3 in Cincinnati, I wrote a column on the plane ride back to Philadelphia, back to the Jersey area, that I really believed that week 3 against Tampa Bay was the line of demarcation for Eli Manning to be the starter. If the Giants were even 1-1, I think he would start in Tampa Bay. But at 0-2, now 0-2 for the sixth time in the last 7 years, I really believe Daniel Jones is going to start in Tampa Bay against the Buccaneers. And at this point, why not? You look at Eli Manning, the offense has been pretty listless, right? They're only 5 of 23 on third down. They're having trouble moving the football down the field. They're only averaging 15.5 points per game. They haven't scored over 20 points against the Cowboys or the Bills. And this is not a roster that's going to compete for a playoff spot this year as it's currently comprised. So I really believe Daniel Jones gives them the best chance to try to salvage this season before it gets too far out of hand. But you also have to look at the other young quarterbacks around the league. You look at Josh Allen. You look at Lamar Jackson. These are guys who played significant time as rookies, and you're seeing the dividends for the Ravens and the Bills as they enter their second year. So I think Pat Shurmur knows that winning has to matter. I think that they understand the future matters. And I think that Daniel Jones gives him the best chance to compete this year, and playing him is what's best for his development going into the future.
And I'm not saying this is all on Eli Manning. Like you pointed out, this entire team right now has many holes in it. The defense, Bills moved the ball up and down the field on them at free will in the first half, and when they had to make a stop in the second half, they couldn't. You look at offense, though, and the one concern is, will they be able to not ruin Daniel Jones this early on? And the offensive line has improved, so why not, right? Get a little energy to this team, and maybe we could see a little change with two winnable games the next 2 weeks with the Bucs and the Redskins.
Yeah, no, I agree. And Zach, here's the thing. The offensive line has been upgraded. Saquon Barkley is averaging 7.8 yards per carry. Eli Manning right now only averaging 6.2 yards per passing attempt, a career low, 9.9 yards per completion. So, again, he's not the reason they're 0-2. You look at the defense, they can't get off the field. They give up big plays. They are just getting targeted in the secondary, whether it's DeAndre Baker or Antonio Hamilton. Quarterbacks are finding them and throwing that way with a lot of success. But the problem comes in that even though this might be their best offensive line in the last 5 to 10 years, even though Saquon Barkley is on pace to even shatter his 2,000 all-purpose yard production that he put forth as a rookie, even though Evan Engram has been reliable as ever in the first 2 weeks. Eli Manning just isn't elevating the play of the offense. And that's the real conundrum here, is that even if the defense can't get off the field, if the offense could just prolong some drives, if they could just, you know, sustain some of these time of possessions and grind out a field goal at the end of a quarter, or, you know, keep an opposing offense off the field, that gives your defense time to rest and it mitigates the damage of that defense. So it's the inverse of complementary football, right? You talk about the Eagles' success in recent years, the Patriots, the Steelers during their heyday. Those teams were successful because they played complementary football. When the offense was down, the defense picked them up. When the defense was down, the offense carried them. So you look at what the Giants are doing right now, neither the offense or the defense is playing at a high level. And Daniel Jones might spark a change, but you know that he's probably not going to do much worse than what Eli Manning has given you in the first 2 weeks.
And that's why I think the experience would be so valuable at this point. You know, I remember we were both covering the Eagles, and they traded Sam Bradford right before the start of the season, and they put in Carson Wentz. The team went 7-9 that year, but he got that experience. They didn't have a whole lot around him. The wide receivers were bad. And then the next year, you saw an MVP type of player. I'm not saying that's going to happen that quickly with Daniel Jones. That experience, though, is so valuable, I think, early on.
No, it really is. And you think about the weapons. We talked about Saquon Barkley. We talked about Ingram. We talked about the improved offensive line.
And you'll Tate back and Shepard back too.
Right. When Shepard and Tate get back, and then you have cap space going into next year, you bring up the Eagles model. And that's where I think the Giants really, you know, botched this entire offseason. And I wrote about it today on NJ.com, that all of this awkwardness and hand-wringing over how are they going to make the transition to Jones? Do they need to talk to Eli Manning before he talks to the media and give him a heads up that they're not committing to him in week three? On and on and on. It's all been a compounding of mistakes that started with bringing him back in the first place. They paid him $5.5 million as a roster bonus on March 16th. He now costs $23.2 million against the cap. Had they just let Eli Manning walk at the end of last year, if his last appearance in a Giants uniform was walking off the field in the regular season finale, you take Daniel Jones, and if he sets the world on fire as he did this August, you start in week one with none of this hanging over your team. If you decide that you're not ready to start Daniel Jones, you can go and sign a Josh McCown off the street as the Eagles did, or just start Alex Tanny or Kyle Lauletta week one against the Cowboys until Jones is ready. But you don't have to be mindful as an organization of Eli Manning's legacy and of how you're going to handle his departure. So the one way that you fix those mistakes, the one way that you right the wrong and get the kid some experience, is to get him on the field. And I think this is the perfect landing spot away from MetLife Stadium in his first start against a defense that he should be able to have some success against. And you come back against the Washington Redskins next week in a division game where if you beat Tampa Bay, you have a chance to pull even a 2-2 in a division race where, okay, the Eagles are banged up. Washington, if you beat them, you'd have a game in hand, and they're a team that's really struggling to gain any footing on their own right. So the quicker you get Jones in there and can try to turn the tide, I think you can, if not salvage this season, lay the groundwork for next year and beyond.
Matt Lombardo covers the Giants, NJ.com, here with us on The Fan. So there's one thing for you to say they should make the change, and there's one thing for me to say it as well. What's preventing them? Is it the owner's loyalty to Eli Manning? Has it been this bizarre dance for the last 2-3 years? Is it Dave Gettleman, Coach Shurmur? What would prevent them from starting Daniel Jones on Sunday?
Yeah, I think that if it's Pat Shurmur's decision, he's going to start Daniel Jones. And I've felt this way ever since July or August. And I wrote it as such, that there seems to be, reading between the lines, a disagreement over whether Eli Manning or Daniel Jones gives the Giants the best chance to win. And if you injected Pat Shurmur with sodium pentothal, truth serum, I think he would say that he believes Daniel Jones gives them the best chance. But you have to be, as an organization, mindful of Eli Manning. They brought him back, and I think this starts right at the top. I think John Mara still has battle scars from the first time they benched Eli Manning, and it went so poorly when they handed it off to Geno Smith and broke up his Iron Man streak, and he was not in the building to deliver the news to Manning personally, and you wound up firing head coach Ben McAdoo and general manager Jerry Reese. I think that they're very mindful of that situation still. And I think that Shurmur understands that wins and losses are going to have to start mattering to him. He's one of the losingest coaches in NFL history. He needs to start stringing together wins. He can't go 3-13 or 4-12 and not be bare minimum on the hot seat next year. So I think the only thing preventing Jones from starting is word from the top that Manning has to be the guy at least one more week.
Do you trust this regime in Gettleman and Shurmur to eventually get this right?
You know, I think that Pat Shurmur deserves the benefit of the doubt here because, yes, they hired him because he would play Eli Manning for 1 year. But I think that deep down he understands that Daniel Jones can be a difference maker. Dave Gettleman, I think the jury is still out. I mean, obviously we can debate the Saquon Barkley pick until we're blue in the face, but you look at the production from Barkley and you look at some of the question marks surrounding some of the other quarterbacks like Sam Darnold, and nobody was taking Lamar Jackson at number two overall. But you look at that pick and that seems to have worked out well for them. Last year's draft class is filled with contributors and seems to be some pretty high talented players, but the jury way out on this year's draft class with DeAndre Baker and Dexter Lawrence still not showing you that they can be relied upon as steady, dominant defensive players. I think the jury's out on Gettleman. I think the jury remains out on what John Mara is as an owner at this stage of his career with a team that is 20 games under 500 since their last Super Bowl victory in 2011. So I think the only member of this organization that I think fans should have a modicum of trust in is Pat Shurmur, because I think deep down he's the only one that truly only cares about winning football games.
When it comes to Eli Manning, and we know the end is near, whether it's this week or a few weeks from now, what happens once they bench Eli Manning? I know if they do it this week, maybe they explore a trade with Pittsburgh. I don't see that being likely. For next year, do you think Eli Manning is at least on a roster? Does he still want to play? You know, he could say that now, but who knows? How do you project the future for Eli Manning after this year?
Zach, I know that the Jacksonville Jaguars have no interest in Eli Manning, and that's the one team with Tom Coughlin running the organization where you think there'd be a chance for a trade. I know the Pittsburgh Steelers are rightfully excited about Mason Rudolph. The kid was, I believe, 12 of 15 for over 100 yards, two touchdowns and a pick at the Seahawks yesterday. So I don't think that the Steelers are a team that would pull the trigger on a trade. You look across the league, the quarterback needy franchises aren't storming the gates to acquire a 38-year-old veteran who is 20 games under 500 since 2011. So you look at Eli Manning's future. If he's not the starting quarterback of the New York Football Giants in 2020, I don't know where he is. I don't know that he retires. I don't know that he winds up on a roster. I think retirement would be the surest bet, but I can almost guarantee he's not back in New York as a backup, and I don't know what the market is for him to be a starting quarterback anywhere else in this league.
Wrap it up with Matt Lombardo, covers the Giants for NJ.com. Zach Gelb here with you on The Fan. I want to take one more thing up with you on the offense and then just get one more in on the defense. With the offense, they get that touchdown right away. Barkley was awesome on that drive. The next three drives, I understand they were short drives. They couldn't get anything cooking, but they only hand the ball off to Barkley three times on those three drives. What did you make of the play calling yesterday after the touchdown and the usage of Saquon Barkley?
Same old, right? How many times did we talk about it a year ago that the easiest way to get positive gains on first and second down is either hand it to or throw it to Saquon Barkley? We talked about it after the Cowboy game and the disappearance in the second half of Saquon Barkley in Dallas. For whatever reason, Pat Shurmur, when he gets behind, and this could be a symptom of him coming from the Andy Reid coaching tree, feels he needs to throw his way out of it. But when your starting wide receivers are Cody Latimer and Benny Fowler and Cody Core and TJ Jones, eventually you need to realize that the quickest way to throw your way out of it, if you're going to, with Eli Manning, dink and dunk the ball down the field as he did against the Cowboys on third and long and he did again yesterday, throw it short to Saquon Barkley on design screen passes or wheel routes. And that's one of the bigger issues here, Zach, is that if this offense is going to be predicated on Saquon Barkley in the passing game, Eli Manning can't throw a screen pass. He can't throw it with any consistency. He struggles to hit Saquon Barkley on the wheel routes. And if that's a fundamental tenet of your offense and the quarterback can't make those rudimentary throws, what's he doing out there?
Last one for Matt Lombardo. When we get to the defense, it was absolutely abysmal in the first half on Sunday. And then in the second half, they played better. However, when they needed to make a stop, they couldn't do so to try to get the ball back to the offense to tie things up. The corners in the first half, it looked like they were playing 15 yards off the line of scrimmage just watching the game on TV. You have Jenkins after the game saying, I can't cover guys for 8 to 10 seconds, so that's throwing the defensive line under the bus, and he's not wrong. But what do you look and how do you view this defense? We know it's bad, but are there any bright spots that you're seeing right now?
Yeah, I think it was flawed from conception to the way that the roster was built, to be honest with you, Zach. I mean, you look at the offseason, what was the biggest need? Pass rush. The Giants to take Daniel Jones at number six, when you can make the argument that they could have waited for number 17 or traded up and jumped Washington and still come away with Daniel Jones. They passed on Ed Oliver, who I believe is a generational talent. You saw how disruptive he is in yesterday's game. They passed on Josh Allen, an elite pass rusher out of Kentucky who went to Jacksonville. They didn't sign a marquee free agent pass rusher. So you look at the biggest flaw, they failed to address it. You look at the cornerback position, and Janoris Jenkins is probably entering near the end of the prime of his career. DeAndre Baker is a first-round rookie who, for all the talk that he was going to be able to play press man coverage at a high level, plays, as you pointed out, 10 or 15 yards off the line of scrimmage and struggles and is getting targeted by opposing quarterbacks. The only way this gets better is if you can generate some front three pressure with Dexter Lawrence and B.J. Hill and Dalvin Tomlinson, and that just hasn't happened so far. That just hasn't happened in the last 2 years, and I think this defense is a work in progress, and maybe in 2020 or 2021 you're talking about all of these young players developing, but I think that's a bit of a stretch. And if you're looking for bright spots, Lorenzo Carter has shown that he can get some decent penetration, and Marcus Golden, when he's not penalized, can get after the quarterback. But 2 weeks in a row, he's had offside penalties negate big plays that keeps the opposing offense on the field. So I think there are going to be a lot of growing pains the next two seasons for the Giants defense. And I'm just speculating here that if there is a fall guy for the Giants missing the playoffs and struggling to win six or seven games this year, it wouldn't surprise me if James Betcher is the one to take the fall.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me either. You can follow him on Twitter at Matt Lombardo NFL. Get all of his takes on the New York Football Giants and also the entire National Football League, and even some Bruce Springsteen and maybe even a little Penn State football. By the way, Penn State and Pitt, what was Narduzzi doing at the end of that game? First and goal, under 5 minutes to go, doesn't hand the ball off to the running backs, and then down seven, he elects to kick a field goal, and then karma served him right for missing that field goal. I don't know what he was doing. That, you must have been very happy on the incompetence of Pat Narduzzi, the coach of Pitt.
Yeah, Zach, my season ticket seats are about 50 feet above where that goal line stand went down. And between screaming myself hoarse and I was scratching my head over what the heck Pat Narduzzi was thinking. Serves him right to miss the field goal. Serves him right to lose the football game. Big stand for the Penn State defense. But the play calling there, you have a first and goal from the 1 yard line. You get four shots at it and you only run the ball, I believe, one of those four plays.
And his explanation afterwards was even worse. The calls on the field by him and Mark Whipple were bad.
I've listened to him five times. I can't understand where he was going with. It's a two-score game.
I don't even like
game.
Penn
you don't
State.
Want to play for overtime. By the way, big ups to your Temple Owls.
Yes.
Taking care of Maryland 2 weeks before Penn State travels to College Park on a Friday night.
You're welcome.
Any concern that I had going into that game blew out the window when the Owls took care of business. So thank you for that.
Matt, we'll continue to read your work at NJ.com, talking to the Giants. Thank you so much for making the time, my friend.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.